Good evening and happy new year, everybody. Welcome to the first sports takeover of 2020 here on Army Radio. Matt and Chris with you on this Friday night. We had some technical difficulties on Wednesday, but we are here and we are ready to go. We're excited.
Better than ever.
A lot to catch up on, so let's get right to it. College football just wrapped up on Monday. We missed all the bowls while we were gone, so we're going to hit on some of those. And of course, our national champion has been crowned. Chris, go ahead.
Well, there was a lot of not BCS bowls, but essentially that's what they are. They call them New Year's Six bowls. Those are the ones that we picked. We did seven games. We did pretty well.
Not bad, for the most part.
The two that we got wrong, Auburn ended up losing to Minnesota, 31-24. Minnesota was ranked 18th. Auburn was 12th. That was a little bit of a surprise. And then the one playoff game, number three Clemson beat number two Ohio State, 29-23. Not that big a surprise. Most of the other ones, though, were pretty standard. Penn State beat Memphis. Alabama crushed Michigan, and you know, the typical Harbaugh sucking at the end of the year fashion. Oregon, Wisconsin, very close. Rose Bowl, very good game. That was probably the most exciting one, I think, of all the postseason. Georgia beat Baylor. That wasn't hard. LSU demolished Oklahoma. I cannot say demolished strong enough. Joe Burrow threw seven passing touchdowns, which in alone is fine. But that was all in the first half of the game. In one half, he had seven passing touchdowns. Some teams don't score seven touchdowns over the course of 3 weeks. Look at our Pittsburgh Steelers, for instance. But he did amazing, added on two more later. So he cruised. 63-28 was that score, which set up a final between number one LSU and number three Clemson. Once again, Clemson finding their way into the national championship game for the second straight year in the, what, fourth year out of five?
I think that sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, so much success had been had up to that point for Clemson. But unfortunately, they ran into a very dominant, very strong LSU team. And that game just, it started off in Clemson's favor, too. They were taking care of business in the first half. But then Joe Burrow said, well, let's just hold on a second. I'm not the Heisman Trophy winner, best player in the nation for no reason. I'm going to take control. And boy, did he take control.
Not unfortunately, Chris. I've been telling you, and I've been telling you, and I've been telling you. It's LSU. It's been LSU. A terrific team. Before I talk about them a little bit more, though, I want to hit on just two other bowls that I don't think you mentioned. Florida, Virginia was closer than I thought it would be.
Oh, yeah, Orange Bowl. That was 36-28, right?
Yes, and it was the number 9 versus the number 24 team, and I kind of thought that would be one of the bigger blowouts of these top-tier bowls, but it wasn't so much. A very early bowl, the Independence Bowl. Not real headlines here, but the Miami Hurricanes got shut out 14-0 to Louisiana Tech. Finished 10-3 to their credit, but that dropped Miami below 500, 6-7. I don't remember if they were ranked at the beginning of the year or if they were getting votes. Yeah. They were ranked.
They were ranked 24th when they played Florida the first week.
So how far they have fallen this year, and I believe they made some changes directly following that game, but that was just one of the scores that stuck out to me a little bit more. I mean, there were some scores that were some really good games, some really tight games, some wider margins that kind of really said a lot about one team over another, but that was the other game outside of like the New Year's Six or the top bowls that really stood out to me. Just not a good game for a team that started the season with some high expectations. Going back to the playoff, as you talked about, LSU dominated all season long, and a lot of records for them. They were the first ever 15-0 SEC school. No SEC school had ever finished with that record. First ever to win seven games against top 10 opponents at the time that they played them is an incredible number. And like
that's
we talked
lot.
About on the show,
it's
I think
the, season.
The only one we would question is Texas. Outside of that one, that still gives you six, and
all
that's still
teams.
Fantastic. Joe Burrow, you talked about the seven touchdown passes in one half. He finished with 12 for the playoff, 60 passing for the season, 65 total touchdowns for the season. None of those have ever been touched before. The 12 touchdowns in the playoff is a playoff record. His 956 passing yards in the two-game playoff, also a record. LSU points in the season, 726, most in the AP era. And Ja'Marr Chase, wide receiver for the Tigers, had the most receiving yards in the championship game, college football playoff or BCS. So they were absolutely fantastic, not only throughout the regular season, but they really dominated a good Oklahoma team, and found a way to beat the defending champions.
Now, the Oklahoma game, I think, was what we all expected. Oklahoma,
I didn't expect it to be that wide of a margin.
I mean, I didn't expect it to be very close, but I'm not surprised it was that far away. Oklahoma, pretty much every year they make the college football playoff, they are the fourth team in, and they end up being just destroyed by whoever they play. It's never really that great of a game in the first place. So they said, hi, we're here again. All right, we'll see you later. We'll sit on the sidelines for the final and whatever. But the final game was 42-25 in LSU's favor too. So Clemson, I think they were up 17-7 at one point. I don't know if it was any more than that.
I think so.
Yeah, we'll say 17-7. At least 17-10 I know they were at one point. So for LSU to kind of pull away in the manner they did, I mean, credit to them. They were the best team, and they showed it.
I think 17-7 is right, because if I remember correctly, in the postgame, they asked LSU's head coach about trailing by double digits for the first time that season. So I think you're right.
And Joe Burrow, like you said, 60 touchdowns through the air, had 5,671 yards total through the air, 76.3 completion percentage. So not only was he slinging the ball left and right, he was doing it at a better rate than you see ever. I would say 70% is usually a good mark for quarterbacks to be at. For him to be all the way at 76 for the whole year, incredible. Six interceptions, too. I mean, come on. This guy did nothing wrong all season. And this LSU team was extremely dominant and not really one that people thought were going to compete going into this season. Yeah, you know, I think people could have put them at 9 wins, 10 wins, competing in the SEC, but I still think many people, including myself, had them below Georgia and Alabama. I know you're smiling over there because you had higher faith in them.
I had them in my playoff coming into the year.
So you had a lot of faith in them. I mean, they were good last year. It's just I didn't see them as one of the best in the SEC, but I guess I should have seen them as one of, and in the end, the best in the entire country.
What I will say, looking back on the college football season, is I think one of the most interesting evolutions of the season was the mentality at the beginning, and I had this mentality even with LSU in my playoff, was that it was Alabama and Clemson above everybody else.
Pretty much, yeah.
And early in the season, we saw Clemson not play so well. Towards the end of the season, we saw Alabama lose some games to very good football teams, albeit, but they still lost football games and finished outside the top 10 when it came down to bowl season. So I think, obviously, Clemson rebounded and worked their way back into the championship game and certainly had a chance at defending their championship. But I would say the majority of people at the beginning of the season probably thought it was a two-horse race. And come the end of it, I mean, one was out and Clemson was probably the third pick for a lot of teams. For a lot of people, I liked LSU. You liked Ohio State. We were not alone in those sentiments. So
no.
It's funny the way the two teams that looked like they would run away with it early in the season kind of not were afterthoughts, but, I mean, a little bit by the end.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't exactly, like you said, it was Alabama-Clemson. It was always Alabama-Clemson. It was never going to be anybody but Alabama-Clemson, but we were wrong. It was somebody but. Yes, Clemson still managed to get in, but it wasn't Alabama. And I think if you would have said at the beginning of the season, do you trust Alabama or Clemson more, I would say majority of people probably would have said Alabama in this sentiment. I know I would have, at least. They had Tua coming back,
probably,
who had dominated, was asserted as a very good starter, whereas Trevor Lawrence obviously had a very good year, is going to be a...
One loss in his collegiate career.
First loss since 2017 when he was a senior in high school. He's
insane.
Yeah, he's going to be good. He's going to be a top five pick in next year's draft. You can guarantee that. One good thing that Clemson does have going for them is Travis Etienne, their star running back, is not going to the draft this year. He's returning for a senior season. Meanwhile, LSU has almost half their team is going to the draft, which they should. They are all NFL caliber draft ready players. Joe Burrow is going to go number one. There will be at least two other people taken in the first round that have played for LSU this season. So I don't know if they're going to be able to keep this up next year, but Clemson certainly has a good opportunity too.
Yeah, they do. And Alabama will get back in the mix. Ohio State will lose some guys, but they'll still
Justin Fields.
They're competitive every year. You'll see a lot of the same characters at the top. I just hope that next year, again, like LSU this year, we can find a team, work their way to the top, and be real contenders that you don't get to see every year, because it's nice to see a little bit of that diversity. But a very entertaining college football season.
Yeah, one last entertaining thing. Finally, people came out, you know, top 10, pretty much as anybody would expect. But we always love talking about who are the bottom teams, you know, the teams that are constantly rotating there.
Revolving door at the bottom five.
It's not SEC teams that are on the outside looking in. It's not ACC teams. It's teams in the American Athletic and the Mountain West. Ranked 20 was Navy. They went 11-2. Cincinnati was 21st at 11-3. Those are both the American Athletic. 22nd was Air Force at 11-2. 23rd was Boise State at 12-2, both in the Mountain West. UCF managed to find their way back in. They finished 10-3 still. Yes, they lost this year finally, but 10-3 is still very good. And then for whatever reason, people like Texas, they're thrown in back in their 8-5. I don't know if that's to give LSU more credit that they beat another team that's still in the top 25 or not. But regardless, that's how the bottom finished out. So for as much of a revolving door there was, Cincinnati was pretty much a mainstay in that bottom five for most of the season, and that's where they finished.
Yeah, Texas is a little bit questionable there, but it'd be nice to see some of those types of schools, the UCFs of the world, bulk up their schedule a little bit in the next 5 to 10 years, and it'd be nice to see somebody that's not in the Power Five conference that also isn't Notre Dame realistically be competitive at the end of the season. So, you know, maybe we're trending in a good direction as far as that's concerned.
The highest group of five finisher was Memphis at 12-2. They finished at 17th. So a lot of room to go for those other five schools, but nonetheless, great college football season. Can finally put a wrap on it till the draft when we talk about how good they all were once again. But for now, that's that on college football for the year. What is not that's that for the year, though, is the NFL. We missed a lot, but there is still a lot to be had. I'm going to kind of go over to start with just kind of the odds and ends that have happened so far, and then we'll kind of get into how standings worked out. So most recently this week, middle linebacker Luke Kuechly played for the Carolina Panthers for a number of years. Excellent middle linebacker. I would say since he entered the league, he's been the best middle linebacker in the entire NFL. He retired at age 28, and that came out of nowhere. Really big surprise. Took the whole league by storm. He was a great guy, loved by everybody, just a dominant, fierce force on the field, and he's hanging up the cleats at age 28.
I'm anxious to see where we go with these types of things. Andrew Luck at the beginning of the year, Luke Kuechly now. Certainly at the age of 28, these guys can afford to step away from the game, and you could certainly argue that it's in their best interest to step away from the game, especially a guy like Luke Kuechly who, you know, isn't just barely getting by in the NFL. I mean, he's a mainstay and has been in Carolina. Defensive Player of the Year, I believe, in 2013. I think he's got 7 Pro Bowls to his career. So very, very accomplished football player. And I think it's a smart move. It's a shocking move, and it's disappointing that you don't get to see a talent like that continue to play. But I think personally for him, it's a smart decision.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's unfortunate to see him go away, but he knows his body. And I mean, he had concussion problems.
He's had injury issues, yeah.
And Carolina is not looking to compete in the next 2 or 3 years.
No.
And if you're him, you know, what's the point? We saw Calvin Johnson. He's like, I'm 30 and the Lions are not doing it. I'm not going to play for a team that gives me no purpose. He hung him up. Andrew Luck was a little bit more surprising because the Colts kind of looked like they were on the upswing again. But
again,
he had his injury
problems. Yep.
And, I mean, these guys are making enough money. Like, there's no issue with that. So, you know, if they want to do it, they can do it. It's on them. It's just surprising when things like this happen of such high-profile players.
Yeah.
You want to go coaches next, or you want to go to...
Let's see. Well, let's hit a couple regular season things before we do. First pick's going to go to the Cincinnati Bengals. They're sitting at 1-15. Not a good year for them. Joe Burrow, obviously, is a potential target for them.
And absolutely. There's no way they're going to take somebody else.
Yeah, Chase Young, I think, is the only one you could argue. I don't think any quarterback's going to go over Burrow, so that's probably their guy there. The Miami Dolphins pick up a Week 17 victory over the New England Patriots.
In
Very
Foxborough.
Good for them. Very influential, as it would turn out in the postseason, and we'll get to that shortly. But so that was kind of a big surprise as the regular season concluded. As far as, Jameis Winston, there's another one. First quarterback in NFL history with 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions. He picked up interception number 30 with a game-ending pick six in overtime to lose the regular season finale for the Buccaneers.
It was fitting. It was a very fitting end to
absolutely,
the season.
Absolutely, absolutely. Interesting stat line there for Jameis Winston. What else do you have?
In terms of like odds and ends for the season?
Yeah, regular season stuff. Or do you want to get into the playoffs?
I can get in coaches first.
All right, let's do coaches.
All right, so as always, after the final regular season game, coaches get fired and new coaches get hired. We've seen coaches go all the way around. I'm going to start in Cleveland, though, because they're the best team to start with
Cleveland,
when you talk about coaching.
Yeah.
So Freddie Kitchens was hired this season to be the answer to get the Browns into the playoffs, into the Super Bowl, as many teams claimed in the summer. Some people even had the Browns winning the division, doing great things while they finished 6-10. Freddie Kitchens, terrible. He's gone. I don't think he will ever be a head coach ever again in the league. Horrible season. He's replaced by former offensive coordinator of the Vikings, now new head coach of the Browns, Kevin Stefanski. After the Vikings had very up and down years with Kirk Cousins, he was good. When he was good, he was really good. When he was bad, he was really bad. I don't know if he's the guy that's going to lead the Browns, but it's who they're going with, at least. So, whatever.
Yeah, it was not somebody that I expected them to have, but it's better than Freddie Kitchens. I think anybody is better than Freddie Kitchens. And from talking on the show and just from you and I talking off the show, you know that I'm a very strong proponent of giving coaches a chance. I hate when coaches are let go after 1 year or after 2 years. I don't like it. If you made that commitment, you need to see it through and you need to actually give them a chance to develop their roster, put their plan in place, and actually execute it. This is the first time ever I've been okay with the coach being fired after year one, because I don't think Freddie Kitchens is professional. I don't think
he can
keep his team disciplined. I don't think he has any business being there. And realistically, this Cleveland team should have been much better than the 6-10 they finished. I mean, people expected them to be in the playoffs, and yeah, that's a stretch, I suppose, for a Cleveland Browns team that has not been able to do that. But on paper, that's where they should be. And I mean, he was calling the plays, and Baker Mayfield didn't look good. OBJ wasn't getting involved. Jarvis Landry had his moments. Nick Chubb was very strong. But I mean, overall, you've got this guy who's questionable as a head coach, also calling your plays. Your offense isn't getting it done. You're absolutely underachieving. I'm good with him being out. I'm good with it.
It's Marvin Lewis with less success. That's all it is. It's someone who can't control their team, but also can't win, so there's no point to keep him. Get rid of him. We'll see what the new guy Stefanski has to offer from the Vikings. I have no expectations for him, but what's the point?
My only expectation is that he'll be better than Freddie Kitchens.
At least manage them better. It's more offensive-minded, so that's good. We'll go to another fun team that everybody loves, adores. America's team, the Dallas Cowboys, finally saw Mr. Handclapper himself, Jason Garrett, after far too long with the Cowboys. He got sent away. They said it was so weird how they fired him, too. They were like, well, we're not going to keep him. And then like 2 days later, well, he's fired. Well, yeah, obviously he's fired. Your team went 3-0, had pretty much an easy path to the playoffs, and you missed the playoffs. You go, what, they go 8-8 or 9-7? Is it 8-8?
8-8, yeah, 8-8.
They had the same record as the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were the far better team. They were first in the league first in offense and like top 10 in defense. And they went 8-8. Their point differential was above 100. I don't know what Jason Garrett was doing. Clearly he didn't either. He had to go. But unlike the Browns, they made a really good hire. Mike McCarthy, former Green Bay Packers coach. He's a new guy in Dallas. I thought this was a great move. It was one I actually called on the show a few months ago, if you recall correctly. I also said where Jason Garrett would go, which we'll get to in a few minutes.
Yeah.
But Mike McCarthy's new coach there, has a Super Bowl victory with Green Bay. A lot of winning seasons with Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, they kind of butted heads at the end, but I've kind of got that vibe from Aaron Rodgers that he kind of butts heads with people more often than not. So I think McCarthy's a good hire for this team. This team is built to win as it currently stands. They just need the right leadership to get them there.
Yeah, I think a change of scenery makes all the difference when it comes to coaching. I don't think Mike McCarthy being let go in Green Bay is any indication of what type of coach he is. He simply was there for a long time, and if he was butting heads with Rodgers, it was going to be one or the other.
They're not getting rid of Rodgers.
No, and that's just the way it goes. There's a shelf life to being a coach in any professional sport. You're not going to – a Bill Belichick is not normal. For him to be there for that long and have that much success is odd. Even for Mike Tomlin's tenure is a long time – in the NFL, in any professional sport. And so I think McCarthy was one of the best hires that they could have had. I think there were two really good guys on the market, him being one and Ron Rivera being the other.
Yes, I agree.
And the fact that Dallas, as you said, in a win now type of mode, with a very talented team on paper that has continued to come up short.
Excellent team on
in
paper.
A weak division too, which you should be able to capitalize on. I think Mike McCarthy is the perfect hire. I want to see how some off-season things play out before I'm ready to crown them division champs, but I certainly am leaning that way now with Mike McCarthy on board.
Yeah, I mean, they still have the same core. They have a lot of good talent. Just get them in the right direction. This should be a very formidable team. Now, speaking of Jason Garrett, he is now the offensive coordinator of the New York Giants, just hired tonight. I also said he was going to go to the Giants, too. I don't know if you recall that part.
You did.
I thought more as head coach, but yeah. I didn't necessarily specify.
No, I
That's
suppose
okay,
not.
Though.
I suppose
he doesn't
not.
Necessarily need to be the head coach, though, because the Giants have Joe Judge. Now, who the hell is Joe Judge, are you asking? Well, he's been just another Belichick prodigy. He was their wide receiver and special teams coach for the past few seasons. He is now the new Giants coach. Pat Shermer had two pretty god-awful seasons with the Giants. They were bad last year. They said, all right, let's get Daniel Jones in here, see if we can be better. They weren't. They went 9-23 over his two seasons. That's not going to get you anywhere, which, you know, get rid of him is fine. But Joe Judge apparently had a lot of good prowess with the Patriots. I mean, I don't know. You know Matthew Slater. He's like a special team aficionado with the Patriots. He's good for whatever reason. Gostkowski is consistently good. So I guess this guy has some kind of talent. I don't know. It seems like just the perfect random hire for the Giants, though, who seem to lack all the direction.
Random's a good word. I'm going to use weird. It just feels weird to me. I don't know why this was the guy that they went after. I don't know what the dynamic's going to look like with a long-tenured head coach now being the offensive coordinator to a first-time guy who was a special teams coach before. Not saying it can't work. Not saying it won't work, but it's weird. It's weird. Josh McDaniels is someone who's been talked about a lot. Potentially being a head coach. Jason Garrett, you thought he'd end up here. He did end up here, but not in the capacity that either one of us would have guessed. It's just weird. I don't know. It's a very Giants thing to do, and we'll see if it works, but I don't know.
Prior to being with the Patriots, the Judge was actually under Nick Saban at Alabama. So if there's a guy that has all the coaching wealth of knowledge in his disposal, it's Judge. Just what's he going to do with it? I don't know.
Do you happen to know offhand if he head coached at any point in college?
Oh, no, he didn't. He was a special teams assistant with Bama, went to New England basically in the same role, just a variety of roles, never really head coaching. He's pretty young, too, so.
Weird. I don't know. Weird.
Another weird one, speaking of college, is Carolina Panthers. They cut ties with Riverboat Ron Rivera about midseason, which it's fine. They were bad, and they, in my opinion, they shouldn't have been. I guess I understand why they were. They had to get rid of him. It's fine. It was kind of a McCarthy situation.
Change of scenery.
Just less success. He's a good coach. Had to go. They made a very interesting hire. Matt Rhule. Prior to about 3 months ago, this guy's name had never, ever come across my eyes, ever heard his name. He was a head coach at Baylor this past year. The same Baylor Bears team that went 11-3 this year after finishing 1-11 a few years ago. This is a guy that can turn teams around. I don't know to what capacity he can turn around a professional football team such as the Panthers, who questions about Cam Newton and have lost their best player on defense in Luke Kuechly, but it's not exactly, you don't really lose anything if this doesn't work out for your team, I don't think.
You say that, but they signed him to a 7-year contract worth $60 million. That's a big commitment. I don't mind the hire. Like, I think he did a very good job turning around Baylor, and I think he could do the same with the Panthers potentially. It was the contract more for me that kind of caught my eye. It's a big commitment to a guy
that is a big deal,
kept
actually.
That was only at Baylor for a few years and doesn't have NFL experience, right?
What'd you say the contract details were?
I believe it's 7 years, $60 million.
Okay. Yeah, that's a...
It's a lot. It's a big contract for a guy who's coached at Baylor for two years.
Yeah, he had a lot of success in short time.
He did, and that's why I like the hire.
But 7 years.
It's a big commitment to a guy that I don't want to say isn't proven, but you have a relatively small sample size in what you're going.
Well, I guess the Panthers think they need a few years to rebuild. I think that's kind of somewhat understood.
Especially now that you've lost the staple on your defense.
They have McCaffrey. That he plays as much
but I'm not checking out on Cam.
No, I'm not.
I'm cool with Cam.
I like him, but I don't know if they like him. I don't know what Matt Rhule wants.
It's only one year left for him.
And he's had a lot of injury problems.
We'll see.
A lot of room for growth with them. Another team that has a lot of room for growth, but I don't think they're going to very much, the Washington Redskins. They had Jay Gruden. He was terrible, awful. Their whole organization, terrible, awful. Can't figure out how to run anything right. They got rid of him, which was fine. He wasn't doing good. They hired Ron Rivera. He brought along former head coach, now defensive coordinator, Jack Del Rio. They were together in Carolina at the time. So maybe they're going to help out the culture a little bit in Washington, because absent of RG3, his rookie year, really there have been a lack of any kind of good things coming out of D.C.
So I look at this two ways. On one hand, Washington has been bad for a long time and really has nothing to work with, nothing to build around. On the other hand, this is the other one of the two coaches that I think was a no-brainer,
right.
Was a great hire.
He was going to get hired somewhere.
Will do fantastic work. He brings Jack Del Rio, I think, is a great addition to that staff. He's been to the Super Bowl with Carolina. And the NFC East, like I said with the Cowboys, is very weak. If there is a division for a team like Washington to make some progress in year one with a new coach, it's the NFC East. And I don't think they're going to be as good as the Cowboys. I mean, they were the other one that got the good coach.
They're not as good.
I don't think they'll be as good as Philadelphia on paper. Philadelphia is still better. But I think that they can make some progress here. And I think in a few years, assuming that they can, you know, make something happen in the draft, sign a couple free agents, I really think Ron Rivera is the guy that can make something happen if anything's going to happen with what they have right now, and hopefully develop Dwayne Haskins so that he's
They got their franchise quarterback. Yep. They have some good-looking young receivers. There's a lot of stuff here. Just what are they going to do with it?
What kind of stuff will it really be?
What can we see? That's really all there was for coaching changes. Some,
you say as if we haven't been talking about it for 10 minutes. There is a lot going on.
It has certainly evolved in the 10 minutes. You might think this is a whole coaching segment, but you're wrong. This is a whole NFL segment.
We haven't even got to the playoffs yet, Chris.
We haven't even got to the way the regular season ended either. So at the end of the regular season, we'll just give basically week 17 is where we can pick it up. Philadelphia managed to beat Dallas in week 16, so they controlled their destiny for the NFC East. Well, they controlled their destiny right into winning the NFC East. Dallas, nothing. We don't have anything for you. Pack your bags. See you later. They missed the playoffs altogether after having their own path to victory. So Eagles managed to steal that race. On the AFC side, the Pittsburgh Steelers were 8-5 and proceeded to just drop 30 points in the final three games, losing all three of those games, falling to 8-8, which is fine. They weren't going to win a playoff game had they managed to crawl their way in there.
The Titans, who we will definitely talk about, are doing much more with that sixth seed than Pittsburgh ever would have.
But they had a lot of problems getting in because they played Houston two of the last 3 weeks. In the first week, they lost to Houston. So they're like, oh, crap, you know, we don't really have the division at this point. We need to work our way into the wild card. And that's exactly what they did. Very convincingly, too. Thankfully, they managed to get Steelers out of there. So Houston got the AFC South. Tennessee was a wild card. Buffalo locked up the wild card, too, which was – they were pretty much in a wild card spot.
That was a given, yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty
much wire to
wire. The other big one, though, the Ravens finished 14-2. They started the season 2-2, won 12 straight. So they were excellent. Best team in the league. You know, credit to them. The interesting dilemma is the 2 and the 3. The 2 seed all year, New England, they're going to be a 1 or a 2. They're going to have a bye. It'll be inevitable. They play Kansas City towards the end of the year. They lost to Kansas City. Okay, they have Kansas City as a tiebreaker, but they still got games on them. Well, after going 8-0, the Patriots decided to finish the season 4-4, including, like you mentioned earlier, a lost to Ryan Fitzpatrick's Dolphins at Foxborough. That's the same game that knocked them out of the 2 seed. Chiefs swooped right in, took the 2 seed, got that first round bye, and for the first time in 10 years, Bill Belichick was playing on AFC Wildcard Weekend. And boy, oh boy, playing is a strong word to use because the Patriots did not really do much of that. Ryan Tannehill threw for less than 100 yards. The Titans scored 20 points. They won. Derrick Henry was remarkable. Put up so many yards on the ground. He had 200 that game or near 200?
Ooh, definitely over 180. Yeah, I don't know if he hit 200 or not.
About 200 yards. It was a great game for them. 2013 was the final. So that's the first time Patriots aren't playing the divisional round in eons. I couldn't even remember. First time they're not in the AFC Championship game in like 9 years.
Long time.
It's a crazy time. So Tennessee had some good success there. I guess we're going to do the AFC first, then go to the NFC.
Sure, we can do it that way.
Seems to be the way I'm going. Why not? Go ahead, take it from here.
Well, the other wild card game was Houston and Buffalo, and I expected this one to be a pretty good one. I thought these two teams were relatively even. They play a similar game.
Both
10-6, solid defense, mobile quarterbacks, a little bit to work with there offensively. Obviously, the Texans have a little bit more, and that's what kind of gave them the edge. Buffalo had a 16-0 lead at halftime.
They were rolling. And Houston.
Yes.
And then they stopped.
22-19 was the final in overtime in favor of the Texans. A really good game throughout. And it's disappointing if you're a Bills fan to see them have that lead and not be able to maintain it. But again, I think, you know, the Texans have that firepower. Deshaun Watson showed that firepower.
A lot of experience with Watson, too, at Clemson.
Yes, that's very
Josh
true.
Josh Allen, Wyoming.
That's very true. It is.
There.
It's different. And when you've got DeAndre Hopkins on the other side, I think that's really the one big thing the Bills are lacking.
They don't have a difference
is
maker.
Is a stud at wide receiver because at running back, they've got Singletary who can get the job done. I think Allen's fine at quarterback. The defense is good. They just don't have a stud in the passing game. And unfortunately for them, the Texans have a couple of them. Will Fuller and Kenny Stills also doing their fair share. So the Houston Texans come out on top there.
There's only one receiver on the Bills that's over 6 foot, too. So yeah, they just get that one guy. They can take their game to that higher level.
It makes
level.
A difference.
They said, all right, 2 years ago, Tyrod's fine. We'll get rid of him. Josh Allen is here. We need to see more next year. They should have won this game, but it's fine they didn't. So that set up in the divisional round in the AFC. Kansas City against Houston and Baltimore against Tennessee. So it was the 1 versus 6 with Baltimore and Tennessee. And, you know, we're going to give you a preview of Lamar Jackson next week as he sits on the couch with us and watches his own Ravens do absolutely nothing, because Tennessee, after a week after marching into Foxborough, marches down to Baltimore and just says, no, Lamar Jackson, it's okay. You don't need to be excellent tonight. We're Tennessee. We're here to knock you out. 28-12 was the final. And yes, Lamar Jackson did have a good stat line, but really, the stats do not tell the tale of the game. It was the Titans game throughout.
Titans are bend, don't break, if I've ever seen it. My goodness.
They don't break either.
Their postseason numbers in terms of yards, not very good. In terms of points, very good. Very good, holding the Baltimore Ravens to only 12. For Derrick Henry, that was his fourth game of the season with 180 yards rushing or more.
He's a beast.
Which is just insane.
I'm so glad that Tennessee's finally using them as he should have been. He was this running back in college. He came into the league and they didn't use him effectively. Now they're like, wait a second. We don't have Mark. Oh, yeah. We haven't even talked about the quarterback situation very much. Mariota, a guy they drafted at number 2 5 years ago, he's not even starting. It's Ryan Tannehill, who they traded for in the offseason as the backup to Mariota in case he got injured.
Good move.
From Miami.
Good move.
Excellent move. Tannehill was not laying up by any means.
He did not have 100 yards passing in this game either. First time, I think, in postseason history.
But what he's not doing is fumbling. He's not intercepting the ball. He is running an offense. That's all they need him to do. It's fine. I get the highest QBR actually all year, like in the entire NFL regular season. It's great. Derrick Henry's doing great. And Baltimore is scratching their head saying, all right, we got here last year with Lamar Jackson. We were young. We lost to the Chargers. We got here again with Lamar Jackson. We lost to the Titans. What do we need to do? What do they need to do?
It's amazing how being the hottest team coming into the playoffs will carry you past teams that otherwise you would not beat. We saw the St. Louis Blues do it. We're seeing the Tennessee Titans do it. Now, will the Titans meet their match eventually?
The Nationals, too.
Maybe. Yeah, the Nationals as well. It's really crazy how being the hottest team going in will carry you farther than being the most talented team going in. And that's pretty much exactly what you've seen. That's the hottest team against the best regular season team, and the one on the hot streak came out on top.
So Tennessee locked their place in for this Sunday. On the other side, we had Kansas City against Houston.
Oh, my.
Houston, grand first quarter, 24-0 at the end of the first quarter. People were firing Andy Reid left and right. However, Andy Reid said, well, come on, guys, 3 more quarters. I still have, let me count, 51 points in me, as the Chiefs just came out of seemingly nowhere. Patrick Mahomes throwing bombs left and right, dancing around, rushing for touchdowns. Damian Williams had like 10 yards rushing and 2 touchdowns. Travis Kelce was catching 3 touchdowns. This offense was just out of control. They won 51-31 after Houston was winning 24-0 at one point. I think it comes down to Bill O'Brien, honestly.
A 24-0 lead, and then they found out just exactly how the Bills felt the week before.
Yeah, honestly.
My goodness.
It was a much more convincing 24-0. Like, they drove down the field. Yeah. They had a block punt. They recovered a punt
Did
fumble.
Everything right.
They were just, everything was going right. But then they had it was 21-0. They went for the field goal, which people thought they should have gone for it. Then they had a fake punt from their own territory after the Chiefs already scored a touchdown, which the Chiefs just stopped, and then they took all that momentum and are not looking back yet, as they have to worry about Tennessee this week. So credit to Andy Reid, credit to Patrick Mahomes. They played great, but man, Houston, what are you doing?
Shout out to our roommate Devin for betting the under on the highest scoring first half in NFL postseason history.
That's right. Combined 82 points in this game. Remarkable. So Kansas City's in. They have Tennessee this week. Should be a good one there. We've been lacking a little bit in the NFC. We'll start with the end of the regular season. We said about the Eagles and Cowboys already. One more game really to note. The Niners play the Seahawks final game of the regular season, Sunday Night Football. The winner wins the NFC West. The loser plays Wild Card Weekend.
On the road.
High stakes, very high stakes. San Francisco stopped Seattle on the goal line, inches away from a touchdown. It gave at the end of the fourth quarter, gave San Fran the win. Seattle ended up being the 5. San Fran was the 1. Seattle was the 5 with Marshawn Lynch, by the way. He came out of retirement because all of Seattle's running backs are just falling left
all
and right.
All of them.
All 3 of them had season-ending injuries in the last 3 weeks. So credit to Pete Carroll for, you know, saying, come on, we got Skittles. Come back, Marshawn. You can do it. And he looked fine while he was with them.
Yeah, sure.
He was fine. So San Fran got the bye. Green Bay got the other bye. So Wild Card Weekend was number 3 New Orleans against number 6 Minnesota. Minnesota, end of the season, not looking so hot. They were 10-6. They were whatever. New Orleans was a Super Bowl, I would say almost favorite even. I think they were picked probably more than the Packers, maybe even more than the Niners.
Probably.
At least among the people we talked to, I think they were highly picked. Well, the only ones that weren't picking them were themselves, as Drew Brees looked flat, very flat. Had some interceptions, fumbles. They missed a field goal. Kirk Cousins, you like that? He looked really great. We always talk about how he can't show up for big games, 0-9 on Monday night in his career. Good thing the first round wasn't on Monday night, because they marched on in, as they do in New Orleans, to the Superdome, won 26-20 in overtime against Drew Brees and Sean Payton, against a 13-3 New Orleans team. Very impressive win for the Vikings.
I believe that made the Saints the first ever 13-win team to lose on Wild Card Weekend.
I think you're right.
Which would make sense, because 13-3 often would get you a bye.
12-4 gets you a bye. 11-5 can even get you a bye sometimes.
Just not the year, I guess, for the Saints, and I kind of feel bad just because they've been so close each of the last 2 years, and they just haven't found a way to make it happen.
But they only have themselves to blame this year.
That's fair.
They were the entire reason why they lost the game. Kirk Cousins played well. Drew Brees did not. They were playing from behind for most of it. They had to scrape to make it even into overtime, and then obviously Minnesota took care of that. But you're right, it is a shame the way it's working out for them. You know, it's always, I think it's a Cowboys problem. You know, okay, it'll be next year. Well, how many of those it'll be next years do they have left in them? Hard to say at this point. In the other game, Wild Card Weekend, not really exciting.
Not much to report.
It was Seattle versus Philly's backups. Carson Wentz got knocked out with a concussion. So 40-year-old Josh McCown came in, tore his hamstring the second half, kept playing anyway. It was 17-9 Seahawks. That was about it. That's all we got to say for that one.
Yeah, not a lot going on there. Let's move to Seattle's next game, where they traveled to Green Bay. Very good game.
Frozen tundra of Lambeau.
28-23 is the final. The Packers do come out on top. I think this game was everything that you would have expected it to be, though. The Seahawks played a lot of close games throughout the year, this being another one.
I think 11. They won one score or less.
Yeah, I think so. A little bit controversial on the play that clinched the game for the Packers, a first down that, you know, the spot may or may not have been right where you would have wanted it to be for the call that was made. But regardless, Green Bay comes out on top, and they will travel this weekend as they attempt to work their way back to the Super Bowl, because the Niners also won the
top
spot.
Took care of business easily.
Really easily. 27-10, you talked about how good Kirk Cousins looked in New Orleans. He did not have that same look in San Francisco, nor did any part of the Vikings offense. They held Dalvin Cook to 18 yards rushing, which is
horrible.
Just impressive is what it is. It's crazy.
It is.
Six sacks also for that San Fran defense. The Vikings really never had a chance to get anything going, and that was kind of the story of the year for them offensively. It was either here's Kirk Cousins doing his thing, throwing touchdown passes, protecting the ball, Dalvin Cook running wild, or
it's not.
You get none of that, and you get 10 points in a playoff game against the 49ers. So our conference championship game on the NFC side will be the Packers traveling to the 49ers, a pair of 13-win teams, the top two seeds in the NFC. I guess the top two remaining seeds in all of football, since
technically,
you've got the 12-4 Chiefs on the other side.
The 9-7 Titans.
And the 9-7 Titans. So that'll be an interesting game. It was not such an interesting game the first time they played. 37-8 was the final for San Francisco in San Francisco. So we're getting an exact rematch for the Packers, and I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with it this time around. On the other side, also a rematch for the Titans and the Chiefs. The Titans took that one 35-32.
I forgot about that
in
game,
the regular
actually.
Season. Yeah, so we have a couple of rematches here on Championship Weekend. I think it's going to be really good. I think the Packers and Niners, I expect it to be close the first time. I expect it will be this time. Certainly, I don't think it's going to look anything like that 37-8 game. I think Aaron Rodgers will have something else to say about that. And on the other side, the Chiefs just walloped the Texans with a 51-point performance, 51-7 in the later stretch of that game, which is just insane. But the Titans are the hottest team in football, and so I think we've got two really good conference championship games coming up. Defense and running, I think, could be the difference maker. It seems like it has been so far.
Chiefs got to stop Derrick Henry. Titans got to stop Patrick Mahomes. Nobody's figured out how to do either of those two things, so I don't know if that'll happen. And in the NFC, there's not really anybody to stop. I think this is more of a coaching game in the NFC, honestly. I think these Packers and Niners, very evenly matched. Honestly, their team structure is very similar. The Packers have Aaron Jones. The Niners have a running back by committee. Jimmy G and Aaron Rodgers, yes, they're not exactly the same, but they're comparable enough, I would say. Both have good defenses. Niners are a little bit better than the Packers, but these are nearly identical teams. Home field is in San Francisco, might be the advantage for them there. One last note about the Vikings. There was a point in the fourth quarter they had four first downs all game against the Niners. So
that's crazy.
That was enough for the Browns to say, we need this guy on our side. If he got them four first downs, imagine what he could do for us. There's been a lot of football to talk about. We've talked about so much. There's so much more to talk about, but we're done for this week. More to come next week. More to come in the show. Right now, though, we do have our break. Please stay tuned. That's on me. That's on me. I know. That's on me. That's on me. It's on my fault. That's on me. That's on me. I know. That's on me.
Welcome back to the show, Sports Takeover. Matt and Chris here on RMU Radio. One other thing to get us caught up on here, the Pittsburgh Penguins have been very successful.
They're great, Matt.
In spite of injuries over our absence.
I love it.
They are one of the best teams in hockey, second in the Metro, third in the East, fourth in the NHL. At least they were the other night when we had this stuff prepared.
Well, they still are,
One and one since then. So very comparable to where they were. Had great success in their last 10. Goal differential is one of the best marks in the NHL. Their win streak was snapped last night, but prior to that, it was the longest in the NHL. St. Louis was there as well, but very good there for Pittsburgh. Home, they're one of the best teams at home, St. Louis being the other team that's very good. Boston, obviously, who ended their winning streak last night, another very good home team. They are top 10 both in goals scored and goals against. They're doing all of this without Jay Guentzel right now, Brian Dumoulin, Nick Bjugstad, Justin Schultz. And of course, they've missed Crosby up until just this week. Evgeny Malkin missed some time. Crystal Tank's missed some time. Everybody's really missed some time, and they continue to do this. Points leaders, Malkin's been fantastic. Gensel's still hanging up there at the top. Though, he is hurt. Brian Rust has been fantastic. Amazing. He missed time early in the season, but he's been very good recently. In terms of games played, Tanev, Simone, Bluger, Pedersen, Aston Reese. Only players that have played in every game.
That's
it. We're halfway through. We're just over halfway through the season. Those are the only guys.
And you would
that have
assume it's because
game.
Oh, they're so bad they just keep rotating people in and out. No, it's because nobody can stay healthy on this team.
Yeah. If you are even close to being an NHL all everyday type of player, you've been in for the Pittsburgh Penguins because other people have not been. A couple of other guys that have just been really good. I've been very happy with Dominic Cahoon. I was really excited when they got him.
So much better than
Olimata. Yes, I was very excited when they got him from Chicago. I'm very happy with what he's doing. Jared McCann has settled in very nicely in his first full season in Pittsburgh. John Marino on the back end.
Six-round pick. We
really
got
good.
Stolen from the Oilers.
Really
one of the
good.
Best rookies in the league, let alone one of the best players on the Penguins this year. Most consistent.
And headed to the All-Star game, Chris Letang, who will captain the Metropolitan Division.
Yeah, he wasn't even in the All-Star game initially. Yeah. And then people get injured left and right, don't show up. So he's like, yeah, I'll captain, I guess.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Which is cool. It's a good opportunity for him. But he's been some struggles as of late, but he's been solid for the most part all year. And Tristan Jarry, playing in goal for Pittsburgh, one of the best save percentage of goals against averages in the NHL.
It's second best in both, and he's second in save percentage, goals against, and shutouts. He's really great.
He's doing playing very well.
Crosby missed 28 games. The Penguins were 18-6-4. They were that was the best record of any team over those 28 games he missed. They didn't have the best player, and they are doing so well. 188 man games have been lost to injury. That's the most in the entire league this season. You said a lot of guys that keep getting injured. Bjugstad's missed a lot of time. Dumoulin, Schultz, Guentzel now will miss pretty much the rest of the regular season. Jarry, excellent. Malkin's been so good both ways. Letang's doing great. This team is a team that I look forward to seeing play in May.
I genuinely believe this team can make a serious run. Like, this team reminds me of the teams that won the Cup in 16 and 17. It looks nothing like the teams that fell short in the last 2 years, especially not the team from last year. They have brought the youth, the speed, and the skill back into this lineup that they took out of
That's
it following the Stanley Cups. It is, and it's what wins hockey games right now. I mean, look at the Blues. The Blues are a team that played a tough physical brand of hockey for years and could never get over the hump despite being one of the best regular season teams of the last decade. Yet, when you add a guy like Ryan O'Reilly, Vladimir Tarasenko comes into his own, and you've got that type of a group playing,
Brian Shen played well.
Suddenly they find a way
Young,
to break
guys.
Through and they win, because that's what wins hockey games now, and that's what wins championships now, and that's what the Pittsburgh Penguins have brought back in. And to me, if they can compete at this level with almost two full bottom lines of forwards being minor league players, primarily minor league players, I am very excited to see what they do once they bring guys back, once guys get healthy. And that can be a nice momentum boost for guys later in the season, getting players like that back. So I think things are in good shape right now for the Penguins.
I think they look better than the 17 team that won the second cup.
Okay, that's fair.
A lot of hockey to be played. Very well, might not win the cup. The way they're playing, though, it reminds me a lot of the first cup winning team.
I agree.
They have all the same speed, skills. Sullivan's coaching them really well. They're all buying into it.
And there's a lot of hungry young guys like we brought up in 16 that are now making an impact, that have not won a Stanley Cup and that could be valuable for that reason down the stretch.
A lot of good things happening in Pittsburgh with hockey. A lot of bad things happening in Houston with baseball as we shift our focus to something that is just evolving into
every day.
Every day you wake up, there's a new headline. There's something new coming out. If you don't know what we're talking about by now, it's the whole sign-stealing scandal that the Astros were accused of, the whole trash can banging using the center field camera relay signs to their players based on banging a trash can, whether it's off-speed or not. Well, then we'll be finished our investigation. Yes, the Astros were stealing signs. Yes, that was a problem. What do we do with problems? We hand down sanctions. And boy, the Astros hit the jackpot in terms of that. $5 million fine to the owner. First and second round draft picks are not on the Astros in 2020 and 2021. They're gone, which it's whatever. It's not like they were going to use them immediately anyway, but it's a lot. A lot of money in signing bonuses they're not going to have. And here's where the good ones come in. GM Jeff Luhnow and manager AJ Hinch got suspended for 1 year. Well, not even, I don't think, 8 hours later. They're both fired. They're done in Houston. They're out of there. The owner said, look, they cheated. You got to get rid of them. I give them credit. They have to get rid of them. Former assistant GM Brandon Taubman, I'm not sure where he's at now. He's also suspended 1 year. So those are the main guys in the Astros organization that have gotten the short end of the stick. Moving to the Red Sox, though. Why am I talking about the Red Sox? What do they got? Well, they have Alex Cora, who was the bench coach for the Astros at the time, who was kind of the ringleader of this whole sign-stealing scandal. He wasn't exactly suspended, but the report said, yeah, you know, Cora's the one who orchestrated the whole thing. Well, the Red Sox said, all right, thanks for the World Series, Alex. See you later. He's gone, too. Carlos Beltran, new manager of the Mets. You're like, what could he possibly have to do with this whole thing? Well, he was a player at the time, and he was right on board there with Alex Cora and the whole let's bang on the trash can thing. Well, he's going to be banging on trash cans on the street because the Mets are no longer employing him, as before he managed a single game for the Mets, they got rid of him too. So in the course of less than a week, three managers of high profile teams that can compete for World Series now are looking for new people. It's a lot.
It's incredible how far this has reached just in a few days since, I mean, we've known about this, but since the sanctions came out. And I think things are interesting in Houston because the owner claims that the World Series that they won is not tainted.
Which is false. It's absolutely tainted.
It is, yes. There's always going to be a little asterisk next to that. It sounds like, and I think Major League Baseball said this to back up the GM and the coach, that they didn't really, the GM I don't think even knew it was happening.
Which is, it's fair. He might not have.
Right.
But he should.
The coach, I believe, disapproved. I read that he damaged the monitors that they were using, but that he did not stop it.
No, yeah. He's like, no, God, no.
Stop, please, don't, no. So it's one of those things
where,
very, very much they should be held responsible. But it's interesting that the GM doesn't know what's happening, and the coach, that it didn't come from him. It sounds like it was very player-driven. Of course, you said Cora was a driving factor behind it. It's interesting, and of course, reports have come out recently in the last, 24, 36 hours, something like that, that it's possible some of the players were wearing a buzzer of some kind while batting, a buzzer that would help them identify what pitch was coming from the pitcher.
So that came, and it's wild how what we're getting sources from. So that came from a Twitter account claiming to be Carlos Beltran's niece, which it's not his niece. And people are like, that's like someone in the MLB's burner account, which a burner account is just like a secondary account someone has where people don't know it's them, where they, you know, essentially you impersonate somebody random and nobody knows who it is. But that same account also said that the Mets were going to hire Beltran 4 days before they did and fire him 1 day before they did. So That's credible in that sense. So if there was buzzing, maybe. And there was the video of Altuve after he hit the walk-off home run this season against Chapman. He was clutching his jersey saying, oh, no, don't rip my jersey off. Why? What do you got to hide? I don't know.
Perhaps a buzzer.
And there might have been, there might not have been. But what we don't know, because I have not heard a single thing from an Astros player.
No.
Nothing. Altuve, no, Bregman, Verlander. There's a guy, Christopher Russo. He does a MLB radio show on MLB Network. Pretty, you know, New York high-powered, big flamboyant guy, whatever. He's like, Verlander always has something to say. What's he saying now? And that's a good point. Verlander does have always a lot to say. He's saying nothing now. Big credit to Mike Fiers for blowing us all up. Oh, I'm going to bring up Jesse Mendoza, too, because that annoyed me. So Mike Fiers brought up the whole, you know,
he was the whistleblower.
Yeah,
he was the one that brought this to light.
Yeah, I guess some people don't like that. But it needed to happen. Jessica Mendoza is like, yeah, I don't think he should have let that happen. He should have said that. Why not? We're not going to let this continue on. You work in the Mets organization. Why do you not want this to happen? Are the Mets doing something? Are other teams doing something? I'm not convinced it's just the Astros. I don't know that the MLB is not convinced that, but I don't know what they're going to do to look into it either.
I would almost guarantee that the Red Sox have in some capacity,
to some extent,
just because Alex Cora was there, and maybe they haven't, but I would certainly think that it's not a coincidence. I would certainly think that something there is a little bit suspicious.
Yeah, sentiment around the league seems to be that, like, you know, this is kind of a thing and we're kind of just letting it happen.
If I remember correctly too, I think I read something that said Major League Baseball was knew that it was happening, and until it was brought to their attention, had no desire to do anything about it. And I don't know if that's true, and I couldn't tell you where
so
I saw
many
that.
Sources and stuff.
Right, because there's so much stuff everywhere. But it's a very interesting story that is nowhere near concluded.
Absolutely not.
Stuff is going to continue to come out. I think you're going to see more and more with the players, one way or the other, true or false. But it's crazy, and it's reaching places that I didn't think it would go near. If you would have told me that Beltran wouldn't manage a single game for the Mets in relation to this, I would have been very surprised to hear that, but here we are. So
it's a lot. It's hard to say, and it's hard to say what will happen. I thought there'd be a postseason ban. There still might be. I don't know. We don't know what's going to happen with the players. I mean, if this, you know, this buzzing thing on their chest or shoulder comes out to be true, well, are they going to hand out more sanctions? Like, what are they going to do? Now, I will say one thing. This is bad. It's very bad. It's kind of good for baseball.
You think so?
Baseball, they always seem to be having trouble. How do we get more people to watch the game? How do we get more people to pay attention? People are paying attention. I've always been a fan of baseball. I don't have a problem with how the game runs, the game works. I think it's fine. I think the stuff they try to do is kind of stupid. But it's going to bring a lot of attention to it. And there's going to be a lot of stuff being said. And we still got like 2 or 3 months till we actually have real baseball. So it is a long off season. And it's not long because we're worrying about free agents like last year. It's just, man, there's just something new every single week.
I see where you're coming from with that. I just have to see what else comes out before I'm ready to say if it's a good thing.
Well,
you're right.
Yeah.
It is bringing attention to a sport that kind of gets put on the back burner, and I absolutely get that. But if something would come out truthfully that Major League Baseball knew of this and did failed to do anything about it, that is not going to be good in any way, shape, or form for Major League Baseball or for baseball in general.
No, if it's kind of isolated to the Astros, maybe it's okay. If it's like, oh, this is a league-wide problem, this is like, oh no, MLB is done. But you know, you read stuff from what a lot of players say, because with Twitter, people say whatever they want now, and I can read it and you can read it instead of waiting for reporters. Alex Wood played for the Dodgers both those years that they lost to the Astros and the Red Sox. He's like, yeah, I'd rather face, you know, essentially a guy on steroids over a guy who knows what pitch I'm throwing. I mean, that's how serious this whole situation is to the players. It just ruins the integrity of the game so much when you can do what you want and they're still going to know what's going on out there. It's rough.
It is, and I'm anxious to see what further developments we have. I would honestly be a little bit surprised if for the foreseeable future we don't have at least some sort of an update each week when we come on the air. Whether it's significant or not is another thing, but I'm sure that we will see stuff with that type of frequency in the next month or so.
Hopefully we will. For the time being, though, we got a show to wrap up, so let's get into some quick picks. Some of these picks kind of already happened since we were supposed to do the show Wednesday, but that doesn't influence the way we made
it. We had our picks made. We're good, yeah.
So we're going to start in the NHL. Penguins and Bruins had not exactly a back-to-back. They played Thursday night, and they played Sunday night. I have the Bruins in the first game, and I have the Penguins in the second game. One of the two is already correct, so we'll see.
Yeah, I had a split for them between the two, so we need the Penguins to take home the W on Sunday to get that one right.
Seems good to me.
Blues at Avalanche, two very good teams in the Western Conference. I'm going to go with the Avs. They're at home. They kind of are on a little bit of a skid. I think the perfect way to end a skid is with a home game against a division rival, so I'm going to go with the Avs.
In typical fashion, nothing influences this pick. I have the Blues just because I felt like it. Second round matchup in the Western Conference, though, I very much see this happening in the future. We got some college basketball now that actually means something. It's conference play at this point. Number 11 Louisville travels to number 3 Duke this weekend. Number 3 Duke will be falling regardless because they lost to Clemson the other night. Go figure, Clemson loses in the football. So they turn around and have a substandard basketball team that manages to knock off Duke, because I guess some top team has to fall to Clemson this week if it's not going to be LSU. Either way, I think Duke has a second loss in him. I think Louisville is a good team. They were at 1 earlier this year, but who wasn't ranked 1 earlier this year? There's been a lot of movement in basketball. I got Cardinals in this one.
I'm going to go with Duke. They both have very good defenses. I think Duke's offense is a little bit better there at home. I'm going to take them in this one. Number 5, Butler at number 14, Villanova. I'm going to go with Butler. They've got a very good defense. They have a better field goal percentage than Villanova. So I think if you can put those two together against the Nova team that has its ups and downs, I think it could result in a Butler win. So that's what I'm going with.
Yeah, I haven't been following basketball very much over the last few weeks. And I looked, I'm like, oh, Butler is 15-1 and ranked 5th. That's not Brad Stevens. That's not what I saw a few years ago. This is new, but this is very good. But Villanova still has Jay Wright, and they will be playing at home, and they will be taking away a victory whenever Butler comes to town. I got Nova. Moving into the NBA, one game there, big game. number one and number two teams in the Eastern Conference right now is the Celtics at the Bucks. The Bucks, I said, would have seven or fewer losses by the time we got back from break. Well, they only have six losses, so there's another one I can chalk up on the old bull prediction board. I'm going to keep with it, though. The Bucks are just so far and away the best team in the entire league. They're going to take care of the Celtics with ease.
I have the Bucks as well. They're very good at home, very strong in their last 10. I think the Celtics are a good team, but I think the Bucks are a better team, so I'll go with Milwaukee. To the NFL, couple of championship games in the AFC. Titans at Chiefs. I'm going to go with the Titans.
I knew you would.
I'm going to keep it rolling. I think Derrick Henry is going to do big things. The Kansas City defense struggled last week. I think they're going to struggle again this week. Tennessee, they're allowing yards, but they're not allowing points. If they shut down Baltimore, they can handle the Chiefs. I'm going Titans.
2 6 seeds have won the Super Bowl in NFL history. Do you happen to know them?
The Steelers and the Packers.
Correct. 05 and 2010.
Yep.
Maybe a third one in the works. Not as far as I'm concerned, though. I said Chiefs and Niners would be the Super Bowl at the onset of the playoffs. That was my third prediction this year, so it means not very much. But for the sense of this week's quick picks, it
means
a lot.
Made it pretty easy.
Sure, so I'm going to go with the Chiefs in this one. Mahomes is just too good. Playing at Arrowhead, too rough. They've had a good stretch of games. Tennessee has, but I don't know if they have another one in them. Another team I don't think has another one in them is Green Bay. They looked a little bit shaky against Seattle last week. Yes, Seattle's very good. Yes, they played at home. They get favorable calls and all that. But they're playing Jimmy G in the 49ers defense. That's a lot to take in for an aging Aaron Rodgers. I like the Niners a lot in this one. It's Sherman versus Rodgers. I think Sherman has the advantage.
I'm going to go with the Niners as well. I said earlier I don't think it'll be the 37-8 blowout that we saw before.
I think
it'll be a good game. But they looked really sharp against Minnesota last week.
They
Packers
sharp all season.
Are a little suspect, I think, still. I want to see more out of them, but I think it's going to be the Niners.
It's funny
this week.
We say they're so suspect. They're 13-3.
They are. They are, and I didn't have them getting past the Seahawks, but they did. So we'll see. I had a tough time picking this one. I really did.
Same for me. Either way, though, good-looking quick picks there. Last but not least, bold predictions. I got two NFL ones. I'm going to start with the Chiefs first. Patrick Mahomes, two touchdowns through the air, one touchdown on the ground this week. There's your quick pick or bold prediction for that.
All right, I'll go bold prediction from the same game. Derrick Henry will rush for 200-plus yards and three touchdowns against the Chiefs.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Defense is weak.
It is, and he's been fantastic so far. And if the Tennessee Titans are going to win, they need Derrick Henry to go crazy. So 200-plus yards, 3-plus touchdowns.
All right, it's a good one. I said it's the Niners defense versus Aaron Rodgers. Nick Bosa, arguably the best player on that Niners defense. Look out, Aaron Rodgers. You're going to get your ball snatched. Strip sack for Nick Bosa this week. There you go. He's only had, I think, one or two forced fumbles all season. So it's not like this is something he does regularly.
Okay. Interesting. We'll see. I'm going to go to the Penguins. I talked about how much I like them and how excited I am for the playoffs. I'm going to say they will advance to at least the Eastern Conference Final. I'm going to call that right now because I really like what I'm seeing out of them.
I agree with that.
I like their offseason moves in the offseason. I think they're paying off right now. If they get healthy, watch out. Eastern Conference or better for the Penguins.
Against Toronto.
We'll see about that.
I got them against Toronto.
We'll see about that.
I have no say in this right now. I do have one say in hockey, though, and that is Detroit. They are awful, horrible, like 13 points away from the next worst team in the league. Jeff Blashill has been with this team for far too long. There has been seven coaches fired this season, which we're going to talk about next week. There might be eight at that point next week because I think Jeff Blashill has got to go. It's January 17th. We got 14 days left in the month. One of those 14 days, he'll be packing up his belongings in his office and getting out of Detroit because they don't have a lot working for him, but he certainly has not given them much to work with. See you later, Jeff.
I will finish bold predictions in Major League Baseball. The Astros will win 92 games or fewer in 2020. I wanted to say they'd miss the playoffs. It's a little early for that. I wanted to give it a lower number than 92. It's still a little early for that. There's still a lot to come. Well, it's 15 less than they won last year is why I went there, which is a big drop-off, but they've lost a lot of people. There's a lot going on here, and I will be happy to make that number lower as things progress, but we aren't the whole way through. I still think they're a talented team, but there's going to be a drop-off is what I'm saying. There's going to be a drop-off for the Astros this season. Things are changing in Houston.
Houston, we have a problem.
Yes, yes, we do. That's all the time that we have for tonight. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We will be back, as long as the technology permits, on Wednesday night next week instead of Friday. Until then, again, thanks for tuning in. Good night, everybody.